The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm with Andre Preux from When Pigs Fly, from Damn Chardonnay. It's his second appearance on the podcast. This is the second one I've done live with a human being since COVID started. Andre, thanks so much for doing this.
It's so weird being in the same room with someone again.
I know.
But it just, I don't know. I'm an extrovert. I mean, you and I think it's one of the reasons why we've gravitated to each other at like tasting events is just that large energy.
Yeah.
And I'm dying to just see people and be around people.
Well, you know, it's funny. The one thing I really miss, even the Napa wine event at the Royal York Hotel, which is rammed and it's so busy and everyone is lining up for Silver Oak. But I miss all of it. Like I miss going to the wines of Germany at the Rom or drinking port at 11 in the morning at the art gallery. You know, like just, I miss those things. And it's not just because, you know, it's you get to try 40, 50, 60 wines.
But it's the people.
You're around people and you're talking to people about wine. It's and they're a passion. And I miss that.
And even just the condensed version of getting a chance to talk to 20 winemakers in one room, you know, to you know, it's... Did you ever see Chuck?
The
TV show, like a long time ago, the guy who like he downloads an entire computer in his brain, and then when he sees something, it triggers it, and it's just like, you know, that's what those events are like. It's like downloading an entire computer in your brain. Sorry for the deep cut in the reference.
No.
It's what we're watching on TV right now while the pandemic is wrapping up.
It's maybe concluding. Yeah, and how about The Matrix? You know, you download the thing and suddenly
you can fly
a helicopter.
Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to start here and we're going to talk about your rosé. And
Hang on. I didn't want to open it so we could get the, because being a radio guy, I mean, it's a little theater of the mind.
There you go.
And also I packed up all my crappy wine glasses. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh yeah. We got the fancy stuff here, don't we?
We're drinking out of Zaltos.
Oh, God. Okay, well, I'm going...
Okay. And here, I'm leaving the bottle here so you can just top yourself up. This is the 2020 When Pigs Fly Pinot Noir Rosé. It is from the Beamsville Bench. It was our first time working with that appellation. I know you've got an agenda. I don't want to hijack your agenda.
That's fine.
We are making 2021 When Pigs Fly from Vine Mount Ridge. I don't know if I can say which grower we've got it from, but we're very excited to work with them. I walked the vineyard last week. It's really exciting.
What's the difference from where this wine, the grapes are sourced from for versus 2021? Sorry if I misunderstood. Are they geographically apart?
Yes. So Beamsville Bench is further west.
Yep.
And then it's below the escarpment and Vine Mount Ridge. We're up on top of the escarpment. And it's a little cooler up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the Pinot that grows up on top of the escarpment.
And the reason I ask that, and it's one of always my, if anyone's listened to a lot of these pods, and thank you for people that do, it's one of my themes is I always like to ask the winemakers in Niagara to be specific about the appellation they're in and what does it specifically do. But more importantly, what are the, and it's not like there's going to be 100 differences, but what are a couple of the different characteristics that that area brings to a specific grape versus another area? Because I think it's important because, you know, we think of, in Italy, there's all these regions and they're different and because of this and that. And, oh, Niagara. Okay, it's a big monolithic thing. And I think it's important just to define the appellations and what they can bring differently to grapes.
I agree, but. You know, having had a chance to bounce around the whole Beamsville side, like I've worked with everything from 20 Mile Bench down to Beamsville Bench, and there's a couple in between that I haven't had a chance to work with. You know, I've learned that the vintage conditions have such an impact on the wine. So, you know, even though I've bounced around, I haven't had any two vintages that are even remotely similar. Like 2021 is a crazy hot summer, but I mean, compared to last year at this time, the grass was yellow. The grass is still green everywhere because we're getting a decent amount of moisture. We're at the point where it's affecting crop yields. Like we're gonna have good crop yield this year, but we might be dealing with mold and mildew.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just the point I'm making, and the point, and this might be an unpopular opinion for some people, is I think we may have carved up Niagara into too many sub appellations, because we have a few sub appellations down there that only have one or two wineries in them.
Why do we do that? Was that the influence of like more influential winemakers or wineries? Like, what would be the reason for that?
I'm not sure because I wasn't around when they did it. But I mean, wines are supposed to, the reason of putting a sub-appellation, like you and I both enjoy Burgundy.
Yes.
You know, Santenay tastes vastly different than Pommard. And, and you know, you get a chance to learn that. I'm not sure that a 20-mile bench Pinot in a hot vintage tastes a hell of a lot different than a Beamsville bench Pinot, even though there are key differences. You get more heat. You get, like, it's site-specific what goes on. You get the hands of the winemakers. But, you know, and I'm not... Someone will school me if I'm wrong. I need to do some more digging on how vastly different the soil conditions are.
It might not be. J.P. Collat from 13th Street will scoff at the idea. For him, he's not at all for trying to really hammer home different appellations and sub-appellations in Niagara. I think he'd be more on the side of it's just about what the individual winemaker does and what the weather is. So it's always an interesting debate. Okay. So now off topic, can you explain to people why really good stemware, just what it does? Because I haven't held one of these in a while. I kind of feel like it's in a Star Wars movie when you know, Obi-Wan gives the lightsaber. You know, it was your father's. You know, like just I haven't held one in so long. It is such a delight to hold this stemware.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the Zaltos are over the top. We're dealing with the Rolls Royce of stemware here. But, I mean, great wine's going to taste good no matter what vessel you put it in. You know, I've drank really good juice in Beaujolais out of the IKEA juice glasses, this and there. But,
of course.
You know, I equate it to just having, like, the full right equipment. A really great bottle of wine is like having, you know, a perfect 1975 Gibson Les Paul and having a really good stemware, having a Zalto is plugging it into that perfect Marshall stack, you know? You could plug it into a little Fender combo. You could plug it into like a 30-watt Vox, and it's going to sound good. It's going to sound different. But when you put that right combination, if you want it to sound like Zeppelin, you got to make it sound like Zeppelin.
So I'm going to give my Star Wars analogy a 7.8 out of 10 for analogy. But I'm gonna give your music, your guitar one. I'm gonna give it an 8.4. I like your analogy. I like your analogy better than mine. Also, I could have done a better Obi-Wan impersonation.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. So, not as sometimes with some of the new world rosés I have, I get just banged with the red fruit. And listen, I'm a fan of the red fruit coming.
Oh, me too.
You know, but this one, it's different. It's a little bit more yellow melon. It's a little bit just more greener fruit, a little more stone fruit. I mean, the red fruit is there, but it's not leading me with, say, like strawberry or raspberry.
I think being in, like, having this be like, I think my sixth wine that we've made, that the company has made, I think there's something that I've learned that I think is really important for people in Niagara to think. Because I think we get a lot of people who come here who are trying to full-on emulate or transplant the flavor profile from another region here.
Yeah.
And
it's insecurity.
And you're going to be fighting that.
I think it's insecurity and also marketing.
Totally.
Oh, no. We're Burgundian. We're Burgundian-style Pinot. Our Pinot, we like to consider it very Burgundian, not like everyone always says that. So we do it for marketing and insecurity.
But I think it's important to have your influences.
Hell yeah.
Nirvana was influenced by the Pixies, if we want to continue with the analogy. But, I mean, the Pixies sound a hell of a... You can see where the overlap comes from. But yeah. Nirvana sounds a hell of a lot different than the Pixies. So, I mean, we're looking towards France with what we're doing. And that's, you know, no qualms about it. I wanted to go New World with our style of rosé. I wanted to get more red because I love New Zealand. I love New Zealand Pinot Noir rosé because it tastes like candy without the sugar.
Mission Hill... I've tried some of their rosé, and it is big, and it's got a lot of the red fruit, and it's an absolute delight.
But I was like, overruled.
I was overruled.
Okay. I have two other business partners and a winemaker, and I mean, the other thing too is I could go there and yell at my winemaker to make a wine taste a certain way, but you work with the hand of cards Mother Nature gives you.
Yeah,
we've said Provence. We're aiming for Provence. This is not Provence, but it's
looks like it.
We're shooting for that in terms of a flavor profile. The thing I love about Provence is the citrus notes on the finish, the citrus pith. I think we're having a tough time with that just because 2020 was such a hot year. And then the other fun thing about this wine, where I make no apologies about it, it's got some weight to it because it underwent malolactic fermentation, and once that happens,
really.
was not planned, but we're sticking with it.
Oh, you know, it's a shame, Andre, especially so many young people suffer from an unplanned malolactic fermentation. And it, wow, that's such a bad wine joke. Okay, so hold on. The unplanned malolactic fermentation. Let's get nerdy for a second before I make fun of what I saw at the LCBO. And
cool.
Just more.
I love making fun of the LCBO.
They just, something so stupid. So ridiculous. But anyway, explain what happened with mallow with your rosé.
It started fermenting and it mm-hmm. kept going. I mean, it's one of those things too where like I am heavily involved in the operations of ADX, but I am not the winemaker. Mm-hmm. I plan on spending more time on the crush pad, and I am spending more time on the crush pad as we do this. I think there are enough winery owners in the province that think they know how to make wine. I am not one of those people, and I think it's important to recognize your weaknesses in all walks of life and defer to the expertise of others. Yeah. So I'd have to talk to Adam Kern, our winemaker, or Vadim Chalikov, who's a partner in the company, not our winemaker, to find out what exactly happened. But I mean, we love it. I mean, it was one of those things where, like I said, we didn't do this on purpose, but we're really happy. It took Guillaume specifically a bit of time to, who's another one of the partners in the company, took him a little bit to warm up to the texture on this, because, you know, rosé, you want it to be crisp, you want it to be clean.
No, you're right. There is more body to it, and you nail like that lemon, that lime pith on the end. The citrus is absolutely there. Okay, we'll bounce back and forth because I'd love. By the way, I'm such a bad host because I just named your wines. But for people listening, what is the name of your like your wine or your wine company?
The company is called the ADX Wine Company, mm-hmm. and it's called ADX because all of the partners in the company were born in the 1980s. And around 2015, when we started the company, the New York Times had published a piece talking about how millennials were destroying the wine business, and we decided to take ownership of that. And I mean, it's interesting because trends come and go.
Yeah.
And I mean, some people will stick on the niche and keep going, but I think around that time, that was when like pet nats were really on the up and coming. I think the natural wine movement was a pendulum that swung really far one way, but we're starting to see it swing back. But yeah. I mean, for us, it's, we're not dogmatic in our winemaking. I want to make something shelf stable. I want to be able to take it to restaurants that I love, but most importantly, I want to be able to sell it to my family mm-hmm. and not have to give them an instruction manual with it.
Yeah, I find sometimes like the really pet nat, natural orange, and there's some good stuff. Like
totally.
I always admire, especially like say Southbrook and their orange wines. But sometimes I feel like I don't know how much of it's that's the wine you make, or now again it's marketing, and it's just like, yeah, this wine is dirty. We don't do anything to it. We take the grapes and we just throw them at the vat, and whatever happens 2 years is what you get. It's like, all right, we get it. You're not using artificial yeast, but it's okay to have a little bit of hand in what's being made.
Totally.
That's all.
Totally. And I mean, it's a fascinating direction with what our company, because we make this rosé is, for all intents and purposes, it's very conventional. It's machine harvested because it's expensive to hand harvest grapes in Ontario. We work with Pinot Noir. We could work with Gamay. We could work with a cheaper grape, but there's no compromise in working with Pinot Noir because we love it. And I love the thrill of trying to find it. But I mean, we control every step of the fermentation for except malolactic apparently. But like we want to make something that is clean and palatable and easy to drink. Now, on the other hand, the Chardonnay that we have working on in the cellar right now and the Pinot Noir, we've been extremely hands-off in the winemaking process. And we've made a risky decision to bottle our Pinot Noir. You'll be one of the first to taste it in September, unfiltered. And I mean, there's a decision that happens where, yes, it's a bit of a winemaker's decision, but it's also a marketing decision. Mm-hmm. Do people care that it's unfiltered? Do I need to put that on the bottle? You know, it's a conversation that takes place.
What do you think right now? Because like personally, I never care when a wine is unfiltered. I don't fear sediment. I don't fear murkiness. I love the beautiful, bright, vibrant color, but that's not the first, second, or third thing I'm looking for when it comes to wine. But, you know, how much discussion is that in terms of the concern, or are people much better about it now than they used to be?
I don't think anyone really cares. I, the number of people who care whether it's unfiltered or not, I mean, the people who are buying the bottles, like I think there's a lot of sommeliers in the city who, it's an interesting fact, but it also becomes part of the marketing story is they can now go to their consumers when they're pouring a bottle of wine on the table to be like, okay, this was a decision that these guys made. You might end up with a bit of sediment in your bottle or in your glass because of this, because it's unfiltered. And they might have the conversation with the person at the table. Does unfiltered make it better? I mean, it's just a decision that we're making to be a little bit more hands-off in the winemaking because we believe it's going to make the wine hopefully tastes better.
So just for the audience, how many vintages? Because you started with the damn Chardonnay.
No. Oh, I packed it already. We started in 2015 with Hair of the Dog Gamay Nouveau.
Oh, God. By the way, I was going to make fun of you. Your first Beaujolais reference was at 6 minutes and 41 seconds.
Okay.
So we had the over-under at about like 9.5. So you were, okay, you were way under. We knew Andre.
Do we really talk about Beaujolais that much?
When I think of like Beaujolais, you're always going to be the first person.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it because I think most people, for other people, I've become like Captain Chardonnay.
Oh, by the way, nothing wrong with that. I am also on the captain Chardonnay team. So, okay, so but with your damn Chardonnay, how many vintages is that?
We skipped 2016 for personal and financial reasons. So we did 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. This is our sixth harvest this year.
Your sixth harvest. And with your rosé, this is the one we're drinking is the...
So it'll be the fourth version that we've made. The one we're drinking right now is the third. So we made it in 2017, 2018. We skipped 2019 for personal and financial reasons. Mm-hmm. And then 2020, we came back with it. We're making... This sold out in about 2 months. The bottles we have in front of us are some of the last ones. Mm-hmm. We're tripling our production next year, which is ambitious. We need to hope that we have three times as many friends that like us.
Yep.
But yeah, it'll be our fourth crack at When Pigs Fly. We have Pinot Noir coming out in the fall. It's our first red wine that we've made since 2015, but it's from 2019. And I got to tell you, this has been... Can I swear?
Yeah, of course you can.
Like, it's been a mind fuck working with 2019. Like, it was incredibly challenging to work with. When Winemaker's Life is a challenging vintage, like, it's incredible. The sugars came in so low. The acids came in so high. How are you going to make something delicious with this? And a couple of years in barrel, we've had some really great advice and guidance from some other winemakers in Niagara who also make great Pinot Noir. I'm sure you could probably guess who may have given us a little bit of advice here and
Thomas.
There. That's one. You know, when this is getting to bottle, it's just like our goal was to make something similar to Damn Chardonnay, which is a $25 bottle of Chardonnay. And I hate that I don't have a tank sample for you to taste, but
that's okay.
As the wine evolved in the barrel, it's just like, okay, maybe this isn't a $24 bottle. This is a $29. It's not about us being greedy. It's about, you know, we're running a business. We need to make sure we have money to keep the business going. And we're also need to make sure we're not screwing our fellow wineries over by coming in with a killer bottle of Pinot Noir that's vastly underpriced. So we just kept tasting it and pushing it. It was just like, just the time in barrel and great guidance in winemaking from Adam, it's turned into a monster. And it's just like, then you get to the point where you're 6 months away from bottling, 4 months away from bottling. It's just like, God, I hope nothing goes wrong. And now we're at the point where it's just like, our target price is $35 a bottle. We think if our last name was Batchelder or Senchuk, we could ask for a little more, but we're not.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep our egos in check.
That's so exciting.
But it's, you know, I just remember the moment when we tasted it in January this year during the pandemic, where like the world was ending and we tasted it. And it's just like, I never thought I'd make a red wine that tasted like this.
That must have felt great.
Yeah, I got verklempt in the on the crush pad. And the other thing too is I'm Captain Chardonnay. I should be losing my mind over Chardonnay, but like, but
Captain Chardonnay, their second in command is going to be Professor Pino, and I'm just trying to go with an alliteration because I'm in radio, and radio is everything is about.
I do like Professor Pino. I Captain Chardonnay needs a sidekick.
Yeah, exactly. Professor Pino here. You know, we can workshop the voice. that's awesome. When is it released?
We're bottling September 17th.
Yep.
I think we are going to flip it to the market pretty quick, much to the chagrin of the winemaking team. I'm sorry if you're hearing this podcast and not liking it. And we'll just put an asterisk beside it that it's going to be bottle shocked. It'll take a month for it to probably really settle down.
Right.
And I think it's going to take probably a year to really relax. But I mean, it's the nice thing about Pinot and Gamay is even when they're a little rambunctious, when they're really well made,
it's fine.
It's still pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
At $35, that's affordable for Pinot.
100% it is. And, you know, you guys aren't going to suddenly see, if you sell out all the wine at 35, it's not like suddenly it's like, all right, guys, we made so much money making this wine, we can retire. You know, I think I always tell people, go 35 for a Canadian wine. I'm like, yeah, if you see the blood, sweat, and tears that go into it, and if you actually look at their financial books, it's not like you guys are out there making.
Oh, and I've had a lot, like, I've become the virtual wine guy. I have a lot of people who call me up for advice on setting up the business, and I don't know how ADX has become a template for success. Yeah, we keep making wine, but I still haven't paid myself. Mm-hmm. But it's not for lack of. I could pay myself. I could pay my partners. We could pay ourselves a little bit, but it would vastly inhibit the ability for us to grow.
Hold on. Now we got, how many years have you been making wine? Since 2015?
Yep.
Okay, so 2015, it's 2021. You've got, you know, six vintages of a variety of wines. Yep.
But we have grown self-funded. Mm-hmm. No investors beyond what's in our own pocket and some right. gracious family loans that we're in the process of repaying.
Mm-hmm. No, our first
harvest was 60 cases.
Yep.
This year, we're on target to make 450 cases.
So 60 cases to 450 cases. No, but the point I was going to make is you've done all these vintages.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work, time, sweat, tears. It's a passion, and you haven't paid yourself yet for it.
We usually cover our food expenses when we do our harvest, and that's our treat to ourselves because we know that when we spend $200 on pizza for me, the guys, and whoever helps us harvest, that's $200 that we could have used to buy a used barrel or grapes.
Right. How many toppings on that? How many toppings on that pizza?
I want all the toppings. Yeah. I'm a prairie boy. Okay, I don't know if anyone's ever looked up like Regina style pizza, but like Houston pizza, Western pizza, it comes in the box. It's like an inch thick.
Yeah.
And if it's not soaking through the bottom of the box in the middle, they've right. screwed it up.
Okay. The LCBO right near where you live. And
yeah.
This is like Young and Davisville.
Yeah.
I'm walking past it.
Yeah.
It's a hot day today.
It is a hot day today.
The sun is out. The sun is beating down. And the sun is beating down on row after row after row of sparkling, all pressed against the window.
Oh, isn't it the Bottega Gold, though? It's a reflective bottle. Come on.
No. But there's tons of wine that's right there. Like, I'm sorry. And no, it's not just the Bottega Gold. It's I counted like six or seven at least in Proseccos. Hopefully there wasn't actually any champagne. But again, hey, you know, Prosecco still deserves its respect.
It does.
What is with the LCBOs? And this is not the first time I've seen it. I've seen it at so many LCBOs. I remember one time I actually said to the cashier, the sun is directly hitting all your sparkling, and I'm sure it gets sold and it's fine, but there's something just it just boggles my mind. It's like, that's your product and it's getting hit by the sun all day.
Yeah. And it's you know, and it's too bad too, like they could have an awning up there. It is a really nice location. I'm surprised they have a very well-stocked vintages section, which is something I appreciate given that it's literally a 60-second walk from my front door.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that I think it's just a stark reminder of the number of people who actually give a crap about what goes into their glass. I think a lot of people think, you know, wine, home, smile, happy, where, yeah. you know, when you climb that pyramid, the number of people who get cerebral about what is in their glass, whether it's Bottega Gold or When Pigs Fly, it becomes exponentially smaller.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's just, I was walking up and I was like, I never understand it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to.
Well, when you're the only retailer in the province, you can get away with abusing your customers.
Well, it is, once again, my biggest complaint. Well, no, we could do 2 hours on the LCBO, but I never like when, you know, someone from the LCBO, when they brag about how much money, you know, that they bring in and, you know, oh, this is tax dollars and this or that. And I'm like, listen, please don't brag about your financial might or your financial wherewithal. You're selling the easiest thing.
Yep.
And you have a monopoly on it. As yep. I say all the time, your logo could be someone holding a kitten over a paper shredder, and you're going to make as much money as you did if you didn't have that logo. It's the, you could put me in charge of the LCBO and my slogan would be, hey, booze, you want some? And it would not change the bottom line one iota.
The thing that really burns me, especially over the past year, I'm careful in how I speak about how the LCBO deals with the Ontario wineries, because there are a lot of wineries that rely on the LCBO as the channel, and there are some good yes. wineries like Featherstone and Flat Rock.
Yep.
My hat's off to them for navigating that shit storm and finding a way to succeed. And I would never want to do anything to submarine how important the LCBO is for wine. Vineland, Chateau des Charmes, all these places that occupy essential parts of the LCBO, but you know, during the pandemic, the LCBO did literally nothing for Ontario wineries. And yeah, fine. Email me. George Slayas, email me. Or whoever at the LCBO, email me. You guys could have put in an emergency cut on breaks to put more money in the pockets of Ontario wineries. You didn't, especially when you were doing hand-over-fist sales, especially of your general list products. Don't tell me that your few pages in the catalog every month is promoting Ontario wine, because it's not. And if you even just take a look at what wineries work with the LCBO, yeah, it's great that your Flat Rock and your Featherstone are there, but they're volume producers. They make a decent amount of wine to do it. There is a problem when your Meldvilles and your 2027s and your Bichelders are not there all the time. You know, there's a reason why these people, there's a reason why you'll never see an ADX product on the shelf of the LC. I definitely probably wouldn't want me there after what I say. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, so, yeah, the LCBO, a lot of issues. There's positives about and, if you're
and
in rural
once again,
areas,
I'm careful because I'm friends with product consultants. And I know there's people who give a crap and work really hard to sell. And the LCBO brings in really wonderful wines, but they could do better. And I think we need more private sector people doing that. I still frequent bottle shops because I can get products I can't get at the LCBO. The LCBO is mediocre, but could be much better.
Absolutely. 100%. The Ontario wineries should be having the same sort of tax breaks that other wineries all across the world have. Also, there should be...
Oh, and they're making money off of a sale of this wine, of When Pigs Fly, even though they're not doing anything, they're not involved with it, because my product goes through the system.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And on a selfish level, I would like the ability to ship, like, my favorite New Zealand wine, or even BC wine, my Okanagan stuff. Like, there's so.
Oh,
much.
That dirty export that we got to bring in.
Anyway, they're just gonna start bitching. What was it like the last year or so, just making wine in time of COVID? Like, just everything had to obviously be a little, at the very least, a little bit different. What was that like for you?
You know, because it's not my main source of income. I was.
By the way, you already established that. It's your main source of pleasure. It's definitely not your main
source
of income.
But the goal is to scale up enough that I can quit working other jobs and make it my vocation. But, I mean, it was hard to not have a little bit of guilt to have the ability to leave the city when we were locked down, to have an excuse to go down to Niagara. There was also a bit of guilt, too, just because, you know, for the people in Niagara who were doing stuff full-time, you know, it was a risk that they took on. You know, and obviously we were careful, masks, checking symptoms, filling out forms and everything. But it's just like, it was stressful. It was not a lot of fun. And it was just like, it was frustrating to have something that, like you said, it is something I do for pleasure. It would bring me a lot of joy to be on the crush pad, to be a part of it, to learn, which is the most important thing. But I mean, we rolled with it, you know, doing our harvest last year when it was before the second lockdown had really kicked in at the end of the summer. We were able to bring a few friends down, followed COVID rules. There were COVID rules set up for the farms and for the grape growers, and we followed all the rules. But, you know, we had a moment where we could all be outside, we could share a lunch and, you know, take some pictures, socially distance, blah, blah, blah. But it was like the last little stretch of normal, but it was just like, it was frustrating to have, because, like, Niagara's always been my happy place.
Yes.
It's been my escape. It's been the place where I go to... it's a place where I go just to, like, escape from, like, the world of working in media and the busyness of the city.
So did you feel guilty because you had friends, your partner, coworkers who were more stuck in the city and more confined, and at least you got to leave and in rural areas and just different visuals to look at and being outside and working outside and also being outside with other humans,
yes,
versus everyone that's trapped in their condo.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And it was a really strange feeling. And then the thing is, I think the guilt is amplified by the fact that I really enjoyed it. Like, that was an outlet for me, and I was, and you know, I'm not taking it for granted. I was incredibly grateful that wine was essential. So we were down there doing an essential service.
Yes,
what we did was deemed essential by King Doug. And
by the way, just to stop for a second, my job, I'm in sports radio, was deemed as essential.
Yep.
Now, your old job at, like, News Talk 1010 or 680, I would argue those ones are more essential than, you know, me yammering about Austin Matthews. But wine should be essential. It is farming. It is agriculture. It is food. Absolutely essential.
And we were grateful to have restaurants that were able to carry the product. Like, we had the conversation about, because we were still selling 2018 Rosé, we had a conversation about doing a pandemic discount at the end of the summer if we had inventory left. And we lucked out to work with some restaurants. I'd like shout out to Ascari, like John Sinopoli and Eric Joyelle, for carrying my product. Where
is Ascari? If one of our listeners would like to go by and frequent a place like that,
it's close
and give
to
them
Queen
their business.
And Carla. I can't remember the other intersection.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm more connected to
Queen East and Carla. Yeah, it's on the south side of Queen East, around there in Carla. Ascari, great wine list, great wine program. One of the better bottle shops. When bottle shops got,
I love Blair's wine list too, because it is as sophisticated as any wine snob or geek would like, but it's nothing over the top. Like, you can go in there and buy a país from Chile, which is a variety that you don't see anywhere at the LCBO. But I could take that home to my friend that I drink wine with who knows nothing about wine, and I'll just say, Steve, is this good or bad? Mm-hmm. And he'll say, it's good. And I don't need to tell him that Pais is an indigenous variety from Chile that's been reclaimed by some really talented winemakers. It's just like, for me, that's the cool factor. For anyone else who goes into this shop,
yeah,
just buy it, drink it. It's good wine.
Yep. Yeah. By the way, a lovely rosé.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah. I mean, it would have been an awkward moment of the podcast if you said that you didn't like it.
No. And you know, when you mentioned Provence, yeah, there's absolutely things that would remind me and take me there. What's it like when you guys are fighting? Because you said, you know, you wanted something a little bit different. You got shut down. Well, what is it like when you guys, not fighting, when you guys are having a conversation about stylistically what you would like your rosé to, you know, taste like, feel like, look like, smell
See,
like?
When you get into business, it's nice to have two partners because you'll never have a tie in terms of a vote. So things are unanimous on one side or the other. Or sometimes you'll have a moment where all three of you will disagree, but we've got a plan. We have it written down where if there's ever a disagreement between all three, we defer to the expertise. So if it's a marketing decision, if it's a marketing problem, like you don't know where you put your glasses.
Yeah, I know. No. I was looking for them. People aren't going to see it because I was looking. I just need to look at something for my notes. And I patted my chest.
Yeah.
And I forgot.
Then you patted your head.
Yes, I patted my head because I put my glasses to the right of me. I'm an old man. I wasn't born in the 1980s. I was born in 1975.
So, yeah, when we have the disagreements, we defer to the expertise of the decision being made. If it's a marketing decision and all three of us disagree, I get the extra clout. If it's a winemaking decision, like Vadim as a winemaker by trade and we're working with Adam, he gets the final say on that.
How much smarter are you now in terms of winemaking and just, and maybe, I don't know, maybe you don't want to say smarter, but just more knowledgeable, whatever, in terms of your knowledge of winemaking versus when you decided I'm gonna do this, like 2015 Andre versus 2021 Andre?
I've still barely scratched the surface in terms of the nitty-gritty of production, but you know, to having an opportunity to work with grape growers and now get to talk to them about what it is they do, and like even just I look at the way that Adam and Vadim speak to me and Guillaume to a certain extent about what's done in the cellar, where I think 5 years ago, it's a lot of stuff that would have been way over our head. I mean, I could still sit here and, you know, I don't understand necessarily the specific strains of yeast. Where if we were to sit down with Thomas Batchelder here, I'm sure he could probably roll through the whole catalog.
We could do, trust me, we could do an hour on yeast. It would be the worst rated episode of this podcast. But yeah, I mean, he could do an
better
hour
or worse rated than talking about specific coopers of French barrels.
Oh, that's a good one. Coopers versus strains of yeast.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is a great battle of what would be the nerdier and just, or what would be the podcast that someone would download but had the least amount of time listened, where after like 7 minutes they just clicked it off, like I'm going to something else. You
That's
got
hilarious.
Way too pretentious.
That's hilarious. No, I think that's it. No, but I, you know what? I think the part that I've learned a lot that's helped me, you know, guide me into the direction of my new career in marketing is I've learned more how to listen to the consumers, because I think as a journalist, my job is to tell people what to drink, and I could stand up on the top of the CN Tower where the transmitters are and scream at people, why aren't you drinking more Beaujolais?
Yeah, and then,
but the
and
reality,
then everyone else, and then every other wine person, why aren't you drinking more Riesling? But seriously, everyone listening, why aren't you drinking more Riesling?
No, totally.
And yeah.
And that's we could definitely talk about that too. But the thing I've learned is like the market's going to drink what the market drinks, even if you like it. There's always room for the niche stuff that we like. You know, like I said earlier when we were doing the Pixies and the Nirvana comparison, Nirvana sold a hell of a lot more records than the Pixies.
But the Pixies at the end of Fight Club, that was a perfect song.
Perfect.
As all the buildings exploded.
Perfect. But I mean, even the band and the caliber of the music they perform, like we could argue the artistic merits of the Pixies versus Nirvana, whether Smells Like Teen Spirit is better or worse than Gigantic.
Oh God, so good.
But like, you know, just because you're into the niche nerdy stuff, it doesn't mean that the market is in it. And I mean, I'm not making rosé because I want to appeal to the masses. I'm making rosé because I want to drink it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you still need to be cognizant of what's happening to the market. There's a reason why so many wineries are making pet nats now. And some of it is because of the passion of the people who are making it. But another thing is, it's what the market wants right now.
How much does that ever clash with you guys? Because you can, and I'm going to do generalizations and stereotypes here. But stereotypes and generalizations come from a kernel of truth, and sometimes we expand them too much into something that's not no longer true. But, you know, you're going to have sometimes the winemaker that just is about the wine, and then they're going to clash with a person doing the marketing going, listen, there is certain realities here that are not romantic and sexy, but at the end of the day, we want to make wine after just 1 year. How hard, and for you guys or other stories you might have heard, how difficult can that be?
You surround yourself with like-minded people. Like I said, a big core, and I don't think I've ever really thought about it until like we're having this conversation right now, is we defer to the expertise. It's why it's written in our business agreement, in our legal documents of how we run the company, is we defer to the expertise. There's a reason why things are working, and there's a reason why we like to work with each other, and there's a reason why we chose to put this team together, is not all of us know everything about every part of the wine industry. So, you know, and we have a financial stake in it. If we end up with a winemaker that wants to make wine for just himself, and we have no way of selling it, that's money out of my pocket.
Yep.
That means that my retirement plan is going to be 2, 3, 4 years further away. Like Pinot from 2019, it's taken me 2 years to get it in bottle.
I can't wait to try that 2019.
I can't wait to bottle it.
But let's get to what
this is really nerdy and deep that we're getting into, like how the wine business works.
It's okay. You know, we'll get to other. Well, we'll see if we get to other stuff, because now we're also going to get nerdy. Because anyone who listened the first time Andre was on, we were talking about damn Chardonnay, and
yes,
and I make no bones about it. I think, you know, I remember my friend who's been on this podcast a couple times, and one of the smartest wine people I know, Emily Pierce.
Yes.
I remember years ago, she said the greatest grape is Chardonnay, and at the time I'm like, Pinot, Nebbiolo, Cabernet.
No, it's Chardonnay.
And then I was like, nope, you are 100% right. The number one grape varietal is Chardonnay. And it's kind of what I want to get into next with you, Andre, is, by the way, you were looking at your watch a bunch of times during the interview, and I'm thinking, am I boring you?
Do
you
have
Were you watching the? Hold on. Were you watching the watch because you had to make sure you fed your dog?
It was that, and also I have a smart watch. So my wife has been text messaging me a play by play of her journey home.
Oh no, where's she coming from?
Downtown.
Okay, so just, is it bad? Is it bad traffic?
No, she's asking me if she needs to pick up green onions.
Okay,
and so. She's letting me know that the pub up the street, the Wallace, is closing as of Saturday, which is really sad because it's a really great pub.
How much does that suck? We'll get to the Chardonnay in a second, but I think because like, we're both connected in some ways to the service industry. You certainly more than me, because you make wine, you sell the wine to restaurants. So you guys have this very tight relationship. Me, I just know people work in the industry,
yeah,
and I go to restaurants often and I support them. And just, you know, I worked in wine a little bit ages ago, but anyway, it's so sad. Like
when the dust settles after this COVID thing, I think a lot of people are in for a rude awakening at how many places are actually going to close.
Yeah. And be replaced with another fucking cannabis store. And I'm nothing against cannabis.
No,
but holy Lord, do we have a lot of them.
And it's not a... I have a whole separate feeling about that. It's just like, I don't understand why anyone would want to get into business. Because like, you don't even get to curate your own products. You get the list, the catalog from the government. And that, anyways. The point I was going to make is, on the other hand, with restaurants, though, is I think there are some great people who are going to come out stronger from this. Who have found ways, like... I know we talked about Ascari, their dinners at home. The chef team at Ascari and Gare de l'Est have found ways to deliver excellent home experiences. This is not a commercial. It's not just because they sell my wine, but it's just like they've found a way to... Like, I bought a pasta kit from them. The sauce came in a vac-sealed thing, and it's just like... And it wasn't that expensive. It was like $20 for fresh pasta, the sauce, and the accoutrement to go with it. You know, where I could go to No Frills and buy a jar of...
Is that dinner for two?
And it's a dinner for two?
Dinner for two for 20, where it's, if it's really good sauce, no, that's...
But the other thing is, I think about what a consumer says, right? Because I could go buy a Perego can of sauce for $1 and, you know, some Checo noodles, which are premium noodles for like $2 for a container. And that's $3 and I can feed me and my wife.
Yeah.
But the experience is it restaurant level? And it's, yes, it is. There are just some people who find, both from the bottle shops and just making sure, like, you know, even when I set foot in Grand Cru Deli, the selection that they have from Cheese Boutique. Cheese Boutique's pretty far to go.
Yeah.
I don't mind paying the markup to buy my chorizo bites and a chunk of Conte when I pick up a bottle of Syrah from Heather at Sips and Bruce,
yep,
there at Grand Cru.
I'm surprised you didn't go back and say, buy a bottle of Gamay from from Sips, but
they have decent there. But if I'm buying Gamma, I'm going to see Josh.
You going? Josh at Archive.
Yeah.
Oh no, excellent stuff there. But okay, let's get to it. The last time we were on, we waxed poetic often about Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Pierce said best grape, and I'm now in agreement with it.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, and I mean. You know, it's not the wine I drink the most. Actually, God, no, it is the wine I drink the most. What the hell? The fuck am I
drinking? My wife, we did. So I just packed up my entire collection. It's about 300 bottles.
Mm-hmm.
It's 60% Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Split about 80% Niagara, 20% Burgundy, and a few Californians mixed in there.
That's perfect. And Niagara is so good at it.
Look to your right. I don't know if this is it. This is out because I don't know if I want to pack it or drink it.
What do you got there?
2019, 2027 Cellars Wismer Foxcroft Chardonnay.
Look at that for a segue. Explain to the listeners your Chardonnays going forward. The grapes are coming from a really good vineyard. Explain what's going on.
Somehow the wine god smiled on me, and last summer I got access to the Wilms Vineyard.
Explain,
Irv Wilms is one of the original founders of 13th Street, mm-hmm. and planted his vineyards in the early 80s. The Chardonnay vineyard was planted in 1983. And last year, because we got that crazy, beautiful, hot, dry summer with cool nights, in my 10 years as a wine writer, when I walked the vineyards on harvest day, the vines looked photoshopped.
Right.
We had some rot that we had to throw out, but like it was insane. It was completely insane. And it was such a blessing to work in that. And I'm not a hugely religious person, but I feel blessed to have a chance to get access to fruit of this caliber because the 2017 Wilms Vineyard Chardonnay from Thomas Batchelder is one of the best Chardonnays from Ontario I've ever had. So when Adam Kern, our winemaker, said, "Hey, I've got this grower. He's got some Chardonnay. The vines are really old. Do you want it?" "Yes." "Who's the grower?" Irv Wilms, just like, How the hell did this happen?
Yeah.
So we've formed a relationship with him. We're buying fruit again this year. We're going to keep working with him as long as we can.
That's awesome. I mean, there's, you know, there's like Elms, Wismer Park. Like there's a bunch of really good vineyards, and they sing. Like just the Chardonnays are excellent. Like
I think we're going to see, there's a lot of virtual wineries now who are partnering with growers who don't have the name recognition as Wismer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see in the next 10 years, one of the nice trends is there's going to be a lot of growers who sell fruit and we'll see their names on the bottles. And I never want to see the crew system in Ontario, but mm-hmm. I think from a marketing standpoint, to tip your hat to the growers and to let multiple wineries work in your vineyard and bring that little taste of the Burgundian model to Ontario, I think is only going to be a good thing, whether it's Gamay, Cabernet Franc. I think it'll add that variety to...
But it adds gravitas to it. It adds, you know, oh, okay, it's this vineyard. And when people get familiar with it, then... And also, it just makes people more excited. Because
totally.
What it does is it now, you when you pour the glass, you're like... Even if you didn't walk through the vines like you did, like, oh, okay, this is a glass from, and I know the grapes came from a very specific location, and that very specific location makes very good wine, and it just increases the appreciation of what you have in your glass, and I am 100% for that.
I just love that it adds another layer of storytelling to put in the bottle. Like,
yes.
If you get a chance to meet Irv, and I recommend everyone get a chance to meet Irv and... Irv and Esther, the proprietors there. Like, Irv is, I've never seen him not in Crocs and socks. And he's a guy like, he connected me with an apricot grower. I made some apricot jam. So I took him a big jar of apricot jam as a finder's fee. He was in a beekeeping suit, but in Crocs and socks with the beekeeping suit. And it's just like, man, I just hope that I have as few fucks to give as Irv Wilms when I reach that age. Just such a supremely decent dude and like a hell of a grower.
Were his calves exposed?
They were not.
Okay, because I was worried for a second there when you said that about his outfit, beekeeper outfit. All right, now another little tangent. I would imagine, and by the way, thank you very much. And for the listeners, they need to know I did take the subway here to visit. Even though I'm doing the morning show tomorrow, I have to wake up at 5:20.
Yes.
I did 60% of my prep for tomorrow's show before I came here. Because I've done radio for a very long time. The Burgundy system, I imagine, is the main problem that the jump from Premier Cru to Grand Cru in price is just insane. Like the jump from Village to premier is one thing, but from premier to Grand Cru, it's crazy. And does the so that's is that the main reason which you have a problem with it, or is it?
I just
it ignores really well made Village level Burgundy.
I just don't like the idea of a governing body getting involved and saying this site has been touched by God, this site has not, because I think especially given the weather climate, like not the political climate, but like the actual climate here is so good for so many grapes. You know, I would hate to see a system that comes into place that begins to narrow the variety that we have here. And I think there's certain sites where we still haven't figured out exactly what does grow. I think we've got probably some vineyards in Ontario where Pinot Noir or Gamay is planted, where Cabernet Franc might be a better site. And I've been a very harsh critic of Niagara Merlot, and I will continue to be a harsh critic of Niagara Merlot, but I'm starting to see a trend of wineries and winemakers really taking the quality of Niagara Merlot in the right direction. So,
is there anyone specific? And I ask this because the Niagara Merlot that I enjoy, it is very big and opulent, and the price reflects it. But you know, there's
ways to do leaner and elegant. Like I love Featherstones year in, year out.
Okay,
I recently tasted one from the guys at All In Wines. It's another virtual winery. They made an unoaked Merlot from 2019 that is just delicious, blue and juicy.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're going to be selling it for, but you know, it's going to be good. Peninsula Ridge every year makes good Merlot, and
that's good because Peninsula Ridge and Featherstone I can find easily at the LCBO.
It's also two wineries that are not like on the tip of people's tongues when we're talking about people with a lot of wine knowledge, right? Like they're the overlooked guys because they're a little bit bigger. I love Featherstone so much.
Featherstone, I mean, listen, their Riesling is it's a go to.
Canadian oak Chardonnay, my friend.
Yeah,
that's it. I think I have a case and a half of it in the cellar that I got packed up and ready to move from vintages going back to 2015.
And the other one though, the Two Sisters. It's big, it's expensive, but you know, I always enjoy that. But getting back to Chardonnay. So you got it there. You're excited, and it's so. What'll be the first vintage of grapes from there?
2020. That magic, like the pandemic vintage.
Let's talk about 2020 for a second. Because
yeah.
Rick Van Sickle, he famously, like he was, I had him on the pod soon after his article came out talking about the 2020 vintage. So I'll get your opinion. The 2020 vintage, as good as what people are saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think a monkey with a barrel could make good wine in 2020, and I know that's a bold statement. And you know what, I don't mean to take away. It's hard to make wine. I don't want to take away from the skills of the winemakers. So 2020 is going to come with its challenges. Grapes like Riesling, Chardonnay, and to a certain extent Gamay and Pinot, because the acids were starting to fall. You can taste it in this. This is not the crispest rosé on the planet. Mm-hmm. It was a hot summer.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of like the actual growing conditions, I've never seen anything like this. Cause like the summer we've had this year, when the heat comes, the heat stays. It's like 30 degrees during the day and 27 at night. In 2020, it was like Chile. We got like 28 degrees during the day and then it dropped down to like 19 at night.
Right.
And then like back up to 28 degrees during the day and then 19 at night. I've never seen anything like it. And that gives the vines enough time to relax and just do what it needs to do. I'm proud of the note I wrote on the back of that because I think it reflects what the 2020 vintage is.
All right, I'm gonna get you to read it because I need better lighting because my regular glass. I was in Vegas and I broke my regular glasses.
Is there a story behind it? Or is it no, the same no, Vegas?
That one was the drunkest I got was in the first and last night when we hit some great wine lists. No, I actually broke it. I was at a pool party. I was with my girlfriend or twin and a friend.
Dude, you're breaking the Vegas motto. Like, what happens in Vegas is supposed to stay in Vegas.
I did the morning show. I did 4 hours. I talked about everything that happened on the trip.
So the tasting note, well, not the tasting note. The note I wrote is great wine comes when the fruit needs to struggle. I think the same can be said about people. I think it's an understatement to say that 2020 was hard, but hopefully this bottle is a reminder that great things come from hard times. And it's just 2020 might be the... Sorry, that's my dog, Henry.
Yeah.
2020 with, I think, most wines is going to come across as one of the best vintages in the history of Niagara.
Right.
Until the next one, which is the fun thing about wine.
It is, because then you don't know when the next wine of the century comes in. And it is a nice contrast By the way, and Henry is going to be making some noise now. What people also need to know for this podcast, I think I spent half of it, petting your cat. But at one point, Henry's head was in my lap. Henry spent about 18 minutes licking my right forearm.
Oh, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so very needy dogs. And listen, if one thing 10 years from now, if we're drinking a 2020 bottle of wine and we're thinking back about all the negatives of 2020, at the very least, if we have a well-balanced, delicious wine, that's really not a bad compromise.
Henry is actually going on the label of the Pinot Noir. So really? Even though it was 2019, we're calling the Pinot Noir rough.
Yeah. Oh. Ah, there it is. The 2019 Rough Pinot Noir. That's hilarious.
Christina Roman came up with the name for it because I know she'll be annoyed if I don't.
If you don't mention it.
Tell everyone that?
Yeah. Hi, Chris. She's probably listening.
But here you go. You're one of the... I guess a lot of people have seen this now, but this is what the label's looking like.
So I'm looking right now at the label on Andre's phone, and it's a picture of his dog, Henry. 2019 Rough Pinot Noir. VQA St. David. Is that St. David's?
St. David's Bench.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yep. Was not allowed to put the name of the vineyard on it, but I mean... people can probably figure it out.
We have only, we don't have a lot of time left. So just a couple of things. You show me a really cool little spreadsheet. I was wondering if you could talk about your wine buying spreadsheet that you were showing me before we got started.
So our way to cope with the pandemic, I've got a couple of very good friends, and we came to the realization last year that one of them had never tasted baller champagne. Mm-hmm. And, so before the second lockdown, so it was Thanksgiving, we'd all got together where we had accepted, okay, we're going to follow the rules. You know, we want to make sure we're safe. We want to set a good example for our friends. Let's put $20 in an envelope, and when lockdown is done in November, we'll get together and we'll buy a bottle of Krug. Lockdown did not end in November.
It didn't.
So we rolled it over. So the four of us, so it's me, my wife, mm-hmm. My friend Danny, who works for Corby, and Carrie, who... is Carrie a friend Mortar. Of the podcast.
Yeah, been on the pod.
So we put $20 a week because we knew we could afford it. We weren't going out, blah, blah, blah. So at Christmas, we had a blowout. We bought a bottle of Krug. We went to Peter Pan Brewster. We bought a bottle of champagne. I can't remember the producer. I apologize. We went to see Bruce at Grand
Cru. Bruce Walner at Grand Cru Deli, yeah.
I got a Chassaigne Montrachet that was transcendent that I can't remember the producer. So, I mean... I'll explain why this is, and I'm sure there's people who are like, well, how could you not remember the producer? And then we bought a 1983 Chateau de la Marque from my birth year, which was unremarkable, but not terribly expensive. But it was just like, the goal that we set was, we're going to drink the wines that we can't afford, but we're going to drink them. Like, yeah. You and I, we would sit here, if I had a bottle of Krug, we would be cerebral about it, even though we would enjoy the hell out of it. But like, you know, these are our Vegas wines. These are the wines we're going to Vegas and we're drinking. So for this year, we did $10 a week, and we decided to hold off till the end of the year.
Yeah.
And you saw the list.
Yeah, it was great. By the way, for me, listen, it's such a great idea. For people that get intimidated by the expensive wine, you should be intimidated, because really expensive wine, mm-hmm. it's really fucking expensive.
Yes, it is.
But if you put away $10 a week, $20 a week, you can try these famous celebrity wines. I think it's cool to try, because
label and reputation. There's no judgment. Like, okay, so this year we bought a 2006 Krug, which was $500 instead mm-hmm. of the $300 of a regular bottle, because we could afford it, and we're going to split it with the four of us. And then the thing is, I've told other people about what we're doing, and like, even some very, very good friends are just like, oh, well, I want to take part. Just like, no, this is our fight club.
Yeah.
We're not expanding behind the four because we want to drink the wines. We don't want to taste the wines. And it's about just like, you know, it's YOLO.
Yeah. And it's about experiencing it. It's going to be about a great night. And also, just, you'll have that mental image in your head all the time, and it puts it in context. Okay, so this is a wine that everyone has talked about for ages, and it's famous. I need to know what it tastes like, what it feels like, what it smells like. And then you try it. And hopefully, and I think at least 8 times out of 10, you'll be like, I get it. I fully get it, why it is this. And that's the important thing. And mentally, it's sort of, there's like a little aha thing that goes off in your head.
But it was the best part of opening the bottle of Krug with our friend Danny, because she was prepared to be disappointed. Because I had talked about my Krug experience. Danny had talked about her Krug experience. And my wife, Anya, had talked about her Krug experience. And she's just like, because you know what it's like when someone hypes something up so much, it's like, you're prepared to do that. The moment that juice hit her lips, a big smile formed upon her face, and it was just like, we did it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, she's like, you know, it wasn't as good as I thought it would be, but like, my expectation was ready to be disappointed, and it was just like, holy crap, this is good stuff.
I find that the best wines for me, the reaction I get is I start to almost laugh, and I get goosebumps. But like, I mean, it's a big smile. At some point, I just laugh and I just stare at the bottle. I'm like, "What are you doing? Look what you're doing."
What's the last one for you?
Oh, I can say the last one when I was in Vegas. And again, like you, I can't remember. I was at this place called the Stratosphere, and I hadn't traveled in ages. So I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I don't care. I'm getting the wine, and it was a Rheingau Riesling, and it was this Alsatian Riesling. I was with four people. I'm like, we're getting that bottle, and then we're going to get that bottle. And they were just so good, and it was just so nice. And we're staring out on the top of the Stratosphere Tower and staring out at Vegas. And it was so geeky. Because what did I get? It was Riesling. And it was so fucking good. So
love
yeah,
it.
That would be it for me. And then I got so drunk that night. But I remember the wines, and then I remember we had a Chambertin. I remember I remember some of the lamb chops, and then I woke up the next morning. But the funny thing is, and we got to end this soon because we're almost at an hour, but my girlfriend will always be shocked. On nights where, we drink a little too much, I'll wake up the next morning, and I always know everything we drank.
Yeah,
and she'll be shocked,
right.
Like, wait a minute, I saw you at the end of the night. How can you remember this? I'm like, we started here, we went here, we went here, we went here.
But you can't remember what you ate.
I know. I had lamb chops. I'm fuzzy on my appetizer. I'm imagining it was some sort of shrimp dish. Or something.
I got to get down to the housewarming when we move.
I can't wait. Andre, we will end this here. It's funny. I because we know each other well and I had sort of an idea what to talk about.
I don't think we hit any of it.
No, we hit some of it, but there's a bunch of stuff that I didn't get to. But I want to say just congrats.
Thank you.
And for the listeners, what they need to know is how excited and passionate Andre is about his second favorite wine, the Pinot Noir that's going to be coming out.
I can't wait
to try it. I love the fact that you get to source Chardonnay grapes from one of the best areas for grapes in Ontario.
That's the other thing,
Canada.
Too. Just like the last like accent to put on this, I've fallen so in love with the bench area that I never thought that like Niagara on the Lake would make, would make me feel a tingle in my balls.
Yeah.
And like walking this vineyard and tasting the wines and tasting Thomas's wines from there and tasting Kevin's wines from the peninsula and just tasting the power of Chardonnay from Niagara on the Lake is awesome.
Remember everyone, ABC, always bottled Chardonnay. All right, that's pretty cheesy. I feel like I got to end on a better note, but Chardonnay is so good. You almost said you found religion. Thank you so much for the rosé.
Thanks for making me feel less lonely in my house in the pandemic.
Thank you for letting me be here with human beings and dogs and cats. It's been really lovely, Andre. I wish you all the best. I can't wait to try the Pinot. I can't wait to try the 2020 Chardonnay. I can't wait to buy a whole bunch of it as well. So again, tell everyone the name, the website, where can they find your stuff?
80x.ca, 80x.ca. Keep an eye open for 2019 Rough Pinot Noir. And if anyone wants to taste our first Normandy cider, which we didn't talk about at all, Normandy style cider, just hit me up at Andre Wine Review on everything.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.